So let us now move. Yesterday we talked about kfiya in general. By get, by karban. Now we noted that in those two categories, those two mitzvot, we have the category of kofano tovacha yomer, rotsani. But there is a few passages in the Torah Kohanim that indicate that karbanot sibur in general or karbanot omer might be different. And that's what I want to look at. So what is the Torah Kohanim?
Sefer.
Great. Which sefer?
It's a commentary on the Torah for specific with the Hilchos.
Is it related to the Shah?
It is the Midrash Halacha. It is from what period of Jewish history?
The Tanoim,
thank you. The same as the Mishnah. This is very important stuff. No, it's before the Gemara. It's from the Mishnah. Time of the Mishnah. The Gemara quotes it, right? It's Midrash Halakha. So just a reminder that Midrash is divided into two categories. Midrash Agadah and Midrash Halakha. Midrash Agadah is what you normally think of when you think Midrash. Midrash Rabbah, Tanhuma, things like that. From various periods. Those are the stories and the miracles and da-da-da-da. Midrash Halakha is halachic exegesis of the Torah. So like every time you have a drasha in the Gemara, that is a moment of Midrash Halakha, but the books in the Midrash Halakha are just that according to the whole book. So we have, on Shmot, we have Michilta de Rishon Bar Yochai, Michilta de Rabbi Yishmael. On Vayikra, we have Torat Kohanim, or the Sifra, the Torat Kohanim, which is what we're looking at now. But Midbar and Dvarim, you have the Sifrei. Okay, those are Midrash Halakha from the...
Isn't there like a concept, I think it was in Kedushin, where it said that not everyone accepts certain drashas, but from like one of them we always accept it, a different Dvarim or something?
Oh no, that was Smuchen. That was Smuchen. Yeah, they're machloket about drasha.
No, yeah, no, but it said like certain rabbis won't accept certain drasha or...
I think
something else, except for when it comes from
the Smuchen.
This, maybe? I thought it said...
It's a machloket within drasha. No, right, with Indra, like how do you do a drasha? Anyways, the Midrash Halakha are collections of Tanaitic, Halachic, Midrash. So Torat Kohanim is the Midrash Halakha on Vayikra. And there are several Rishonim who wrote on the Midrash Halakha. The most famous of them is probably the Ravid, as in the Ravid that you know from the Rambam, that same person. His name was Avram ben David. There are several Ravids. Not all of them are Avram ben David. Some of them are Avram Av Beit Din.
They really should get last names.
So they do. There's the There's the Avram Balasaga. There's the Ravid Balasaga. There's the Ravid Bala Eshkol. There's the Ravid the historian, Avram ibn Daud, which is just another way of saying Avram ben David. He actually is Avram ben David, but he went by, you know, but he was Avram ibn Daud. Now this Ravid is from what? From where? Provence. Seems to be the answer. Oh, it just gets Provence. The other major Rishon on the Torah Kohanim who we're going to look at now is the Rash Mishans. Who is the Rash Mishans? Shimshon of Sens. He is. Where is he from?
Sens.
Yes, which is where?
Provence.
France, thank you. He is a Bala Tosfot. He is one of the most important of the Bala Tosfot. He's also the same person who wrote on Mishnah. You know, on Mishnah, we have very few Rishonim on Mishnah. We have the Rambam and we have the Rash. That's the same Rash. Rash Mishans. When he's quoted in Tosfot, though, he's not called the Rash Mishans. He's called usually...
There's a thing on...
All of Mishnah. And then he's quoted... When he's quoted in Tosfot, he's usually called the Rashba. The Rashba in Tosfot is not the Sfardi Rashba, Rishon ben Aderet. It is the Rash Mishans, Rishimshon ben Avram.
It's very confusing.
Yes, it is. It's okay. Eventually, you'll get the hang of all 500 million Rishonim or something. And then, the other major early commentary we have on it is Rabbeinu Hillel, who is from?
Provence.
Nope.
Spain.
Nope.
Nope.
Germany.
Poland.
Nope. Nope.
Egypt.
Nope.
Wait, Sparta, your countries are Russian?
Europe.
Great, thank you. Hillel ben Eliakim, who is from? He's from Greece.
What? From Greece. There were Jews in Greece.
Yes, he's not really well known besides for his commentary on Hillel ben Eliakim. I'll get you his biography. Hillel ben Eliakim mechachmei rishonim yadua b'pirushov medrashei halacha. He lived in the 11th century, so parallel to Baal Yatosvot, but he is from Sil. It's written as Silvidi, which I'm not really sure. It's either Silvery or Salonika, or no one's really quite sure, but he's from Greece. Okay? Those are the three main Rishona commentaries we have on the Torah Kohanim. So, look at number 9. This is from the Torah Kohanim. V'heinif et ha'omer lifnei Hashem. You shall wave the Omer before God. Shloshet Shemot Yeshlo. It has three names. Omer Shibalim, Omer Tnufa, Omer Shmo. Okay, fine. Lirtzom Chem. To their, in accordance with their will. Ein Kofin. Ein Atzibor Al Kolcho. That's probably a Gersa mistake. Ein Kofin Edat Zibor Al Karcho, or something like that. And in fact, that is the Girsa that the Rosh Mishnas has, because Ein Kofin Edat Zibor doesn't make any sense. The Girsa in the Rosh is Edat Zibor, you cannot coerce the community. So now, logically, if you just had this Rasha and you stopped, what would you tell me?
You can't.
What does it mean when it says you cannot be Kofe that Zibor Al Karcho? You cannot coerce them. So what questions do we need to ask?
Why can't you coerce?
Define coerce. One, why can't you coerce them? Two, define coerce. Thank you. And the third is whatever halacha being introduced here, is this a local halacha to Omer? Or is it true of all Karbanot? Sibur. We don't know. So let's start with the second question. What does coerce mean here? What possibilities do I have?
Physical abuse.
Verbal.
Meaning?
Mental abuse.
Okay, that's one way of looking at it, but that's not what I mean. I mean halachically, what do I mean? Meaning?
Excommunication.
No, come on, that's not what I mean. Meaning, one possibility, remember yesterday we saw by a regular karban, are you allowed to coerce? Yes. Does it need to be in accordance with their will?
Yes.
Yes! Yakrivo do means you can coerce. Lirzono means with their will. What's the Gemara solution? And the Sifra solution?
You
Kovinoto.
Kovinoto.
So you wrote Sani. So when we say you can't coerce here, what does that mean? Does that mean you can't coerce
at all?
At all? Or it just means you can't coerce without waiting for the I want to? Right? Which one does it mean? Meaning, is this identical to Korban Yachid or not? So the Ravid, if you skip for a moment to 11. The Ravid just says, don't get too excited. This Sifra means nothing different than the previous Sifra. Meaning, you can coerce the Tzibur until they say Rotsani or Rotsanachnu. It's exactly identical to a regular Karban. That's all. Let's look at the Ravid in 11. Oh, good. Hold that thought. But the Ravid says fundamentally, Lirtzon Chem. Look at 11. Lirtzon chem ve'en kofin atzibur al korcham ad sheyomer rotze ani. Well, actually, it's not clear what he says. He may be saying that. Right? It sounds like in the Ravid, though it's not totally clear. Though many of the Achronim suggested that, but the Ravid is saying is that it's the same that you can be kofeh them. It's just you need to wait until Rotsani. Now I'm not actually sure that's what it means, because it's a little bit ambiguous. Rotson chem, ve'ein kofeh natzibor al korcham, achiyomer Rotsani. So that it could go either way, right? You could either say it means you cannot coerce them, even until they say Rotsani, or you can't coerce them, meaning, or it depends where you put the
comma.
Yeah, exactly. Now, many of the Achronim assume that what the Ravid is saying is, and I'm not sure he's saying this, now that I actually look at it for the 10th time, I'm not sure he's saying this, right? That Sibor is not different. He might actually be saying they're different. I'm not sure. I'll be honest. Right? Like, if you look in...
That's convincing.
I'm not 100% sure, right? The truth is, the more I read it, the more I think he might agree with the Rosh Mishan. The Rosh says it explicitly. So if you look at, go back to 9, the Rosh Mishan says explicitly, so the Rosh is in the commentary on the right, on the left hand side, that's the Rosh. Lirtzonchem, ein kofin eret zibor baal korcham, ein ba'in alein beidin l'kayem ha-mitzvot, ela b'rashot u'viratzon. The court does not come against them to fulfill the mitzvah, meaning doesn't force them unless it has permission with will. Ki ginayu l'karban sibor l'hiyot karban be'achreach. Afilu amru rotzimani. Because it's just degrading for a communal karban to be brought under coercion, even if they say rotzimani. Right, even if they say we want, meaning the Rosh is totally explicit, the Ravid less so, but this might be what he means. But he's completely
one thing is that also just the singular person.
What? Good. So now the thing is that the Ravid elsewhere does seem to say, and this is what they note here in the footnote on the in the Masifta, that elsewhere the Ravid makes it a little bit clearer that he thinks you can't coerce, you just have to wait until Rotzani. So it is possible that's what the Ravid means. So let's assume that's a possibility.
That was for the single person.
That was even the Tzibor, that's the Ravid. Right, I mean, the Ravid, right, let's note that at least in one place in the Torah, and this is how they understand it here, and some of the Achronim say this as well, that the Ravid thinks that the Tzibur is the same as everybody else, who can coerce until they, as long as they say we want. But the Rosh is explicit that you can't do that. Right, the Rosh is very explicit. You are not allowed to coerce the Tzibur. Why not? Right, so why not? Why would you say that a Tzibur is different? Now, the Ravid has a technical problem. If you think the Ravid says you can coerce, we have a technical problem, which is, how exactly do you coerce? Yeah. Who are you coercing? Fine, technical problems, we'll figure it out.
It's one individual coercing a whole thing?
Or whatever. Or there's 20,000 people who don't want it, and 100,000 people who do, so they coerce the 20,000 to say, we want. I don't know.
I guess maybe it depends how you view a Tzibur. If you view a Tzibur as one whole person versus separate people.
Good. So I suggested this when I was talking with one of my male conferences about this, that part of this might depend on how you view the Tzibur. And in general, and if you want, we can do a separate share on this, but there's a machlokas. Is a Tzibur viewed halachically as a conglomerate of its parts, or is what we call in halacha, in American law, a corporate entity?
Yeah.
Meaning, Tzibur is
citizens,
right? It's like Apple, right? No people make up Apple. There are directors and stuff like that, but Apple is a theoretical thing called Apple.
This is the Citizens United court case.
It's every corporation case, basically.
The original.
Now, if you think that a Tzibur is made up of a bunch of individuals, that's how halachically it's viewed, that it's just a lot of people, a lot of individuals, so then it might be hard, but I would understand why you would say fundamentally a carbon Tzibur is exactly like a carbon Yachid. It's just a lot harder to coerce them. Right? You just have got to coerce a lot of people. But if you think that they're a corporate entity, right, that a Tzibur is something different, so then you might say, well, maybe you can't coerce them. And this for several reasons. So one possibility, which the Rosh doesn't say, which is...
You don't have the authority to.
Or it's just impossible. Meaning, you can't coerce a theoretical entity.
Yes.
Right? What is that? Like, how are you going to do that?
I mean, you only can't till you could.
But the Rosh doesn't actually say this. What is the Rosh's argument? The Rosh says, why can't you coerce? It's degrading. Now, what does that mean? Now, according to this Svara, according to Rosh, does it really matter formally, whether it's Sibur is a different entity?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think the Rosh is based on corporate entity, not corporate entity. Right? He seems to make a different type of an argument. Right? You could have said, you can't coerce the Tzibur because there's no such thing. The Tzibur doesn't exist. It's a corporate entity. Who are you going to coerce? It isn't made up of individuals. So what might the Rosh be saying?
If you have to coerce the whole Tzibur, then like you got other problems.
Right, I mean, that seems to be what he's saying. In simple pshat, it's just like that. It's pasnished. Right, meaning it's one thing to say that an individual, I have to coerce Ashiyom Rodzani. But a Tzibur, just, it's just wrong. Like, there are thousands and thousands of people who are saying, no, we don't want to bring a Korban. Now, I think you could push it a little bit farther, though. It's, I don't think it,
if no one wants to do this thing, then...
Oh, so that's assuming nobody.
It doesn't mean anything.
Good. So this is where
even the majority.
Good. So this is where I think we might be getting, and this is what I wonder, right? You could understand the Rosh as simply saying it's just, you know, it just feels wrong to be beating up 20,000 people, 50,000 people, 100,000 people to get them to say, yeah, we really want to bring it to God. But it might be more than that, right? It might be. Do you remember? We saw yesterday already that the Midrash says, what does it mean, Reach Nichalach? Why is the carbon a Reach Nichalach to God? What is it? It's the sweet smell of
frankincense.
Of obedience. Right? That I commanded and you kept my will. It could be that it's not just that it seems weird to force everybody. But Noah, what's the problem here? It's clear that Kofen Vata Yushayom Rotsani. Remember we said, based on the Rambam, that what? That you coerce the person.
He really wants to do it.
Yeah. So for one person, okay. But if you have to get the whole Tzibur...
I don't think they really want to
do it. So here again, it's subdivided. I can see this going two ways. And I don't have a firm answer for this. So one possibility is to say... Again, I don't think this is a Rosh. One possibility is to say, look... Maybe every time I look at an individual, I can say, deep down, you really want to do the right thing. But when you have a million people, someone in there is a real jerk. Deep down, as deep as you go, he's still a jerk. Right? Like, as deep as you go, no matter how deep you go. Right? Like, ontologically, metaphysically, he's just a bad person. I don't know. Or, right, again, we have multiple possibilities here. Or, you say something different. Which is, maybe for an individual, we can suffice... by saying, okay, I'm going to assume that that's what you want. I don't need your free will. I don't need, like, your pure voluntary, you know, your voluntary spirit. I don't need you to be into it. I just need you to say yes. And then I can say, yeah, probably deep down he really wanted it. But maybe a Tzibur, a carbon Tzibur, which reflects the whole nation... It's just, you don't want to suffice with that low-level will. You want that which represents the people to be an expression, not just of like deep-seated Freudian assumptions about what you really mean. But this is very Freudian, right? You say you don't, by which we know you do. For a community, for the nation, we want it to be an expression of, like...
Want.
Like actual, what a normal person looks at and says, that means he wants to do it. Right? Not, I have a gun to my head, I really want it, and deep down it reflects your will. Like, what we normally mean by want, which is, you know, I would like to do this.
Yeah.
So here I think we have a bunch of possibilities, right? One is to say, maybe Tzibur really is just like the Yachid. Or to say, no, it's different. Either because there's no one to coerce, because it's a corporate entity. Or because... just optics, right? Maybe what the Rosh means is just optics, right? Forcing 50,000 people just looks bad. It just, right, just wrong. One person is bad enough, but 50,000 people, forget it. Or you say that, no, when it comes to a community, it's one thing to say that an individual, I have to hold his hand behind his back until he says yes. But the Tzibur, we want the relationship of the nation with God to not be one of, you know... coercion. We want it to be one of
love.
Yeah. Right? Of will, at least. Or willing obedience. Okay? I don't know if you could call it love. Love, willing obedience, whatever. You know? I don't know if I need that. Love. Okay. willing obedience, okay?
It's a start.
It's a start. Whether it needs a law would be ideal, great. But willing obedience is maybe the... My tendency is to think that the Rosh means one of those last two. Right? Either that it's optics, but my tendency is to, again, I have no proof for it, is to say the Rosh means the last formulation. That when it comes to a tzibur, the way it reflects obedience and the on the relationship between God and the Jewish people, you want more than I hold the gun to your head. And so let's look at Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch picks up on this Rosh, and he says, "Umidei avri bazera iti b'torat kohanim." Parshat Omer Perek Yud Halacha Hey. I was reading the Torah Kohanim, and hey, I found this line. Veheinifra Omer Lirtzonchem in Kofen Etzibor Baal Karchol. Vehu Chidush Gadol. This Torah Kohanim is very novel. The Bevadai Kol Kofen Etzibor Bevadai Yei Im Yesh Beyecholet Lachuf Otam Bevadai Kofen Kamo Kol Mitzvah Rasei. He said, why not? If you could coerce the Tzibor, however you would do that, so why shouldn't you? V'chol karbanot kofin achi yom rotzani kemuvor kama pamim b'shas uviramba. Right, he says. Right, we know that by other karbanot you coerce until they say rotzani. He says v'nir eh dihine. He said maybe this is what drove the Torah Kohanim. Dihine galik kol karbanot dershin and yakrivato bal karcho uktiv lirtzono. By every regular karban, how did we get to this compromise of kofen achi yom rotzani? Two different words. Yakriv, bring, which we interpret as even under coercion. And lirtzono is in accordance with his will. And the compromise we come up with is coerce until he wants to. Aval kan, k'tiv lirtzonchem l'chud. Here it just says, in accordance with your will. Imkein nira debinan ratzon gamur, and this is right. So the Rosh is the Minchas Chinuch. I think is not taking the optics approach, right? The Rosh is saying it looks bad. He's taking a more fundamental one, which is
doesn't say
correct. It's that normally you need ratzon, but it's qualified by yakriv. This is pure, unadulterated ratzon. And that's what you need. I'll call upon him to me at least. But he said the Rambam never mentions this. Maybe brighter the sifav v'sifrei. V'afilehichad the gemar didan cholik. V'frad kan kashrein mavur b'shas ha'ibuch v'tzarach in gadol. And he says, I'm a little bit shocked because the Rambam doesn't quote this. And the Rambam normally quotes the Midrash Halacha as long as they don't go against the Gemara. So according to Minchas Chinuch, therefore, what do you have? The Minchas Chinuch thinks that the simple pshat in the Sifra is like the more radical read we suggested within the Rash, which is that by a tzibur you need free will. But he also thinks that even if it's not the Ravid I said I have a little bit of a suffix about, but he thinks the Rambam Paskins, because the Rambam leaves it out, how does he assume the Rambam Paskins? That you can coerce, just like any other carbon, and that's why he doesn't qualify it. Then he quotes yet another position from the Zayat Ra'anan. Who's the Zayat Ra'anan?
Sounds Sephardic.
Very good. It's not. It's a perush on the Midrash Halakha by Rabbi Avraham Gombiner.
Never mind.
Better known as?
Ibn Ezra.
No.
No, you know, it's the other one.
It's the Mogen Avraham.
Mogen Avraham.
As Ashkenazi as you get. The standard Ashkenazi Perush on Shulchan Aruch, Avraham Gombiner of Poland. He also wrote a Perush on the Midrash Halacha called Zayit Ra'anan. And he notes that Achar Kach Ra'iti B'Zayit Ra'anan Amad Bazeh V'Katav Afte Al Torah Midrash Kofin Mikol Maka. I should not have a pen in my mouth. Kevin the Matir Chadash Lo Yidrash Lu. Sorry, Al Tmidinu Musafin Kofin. So the Magen Avraham, the Zayit Ra'anan, has the following. He says, I think that this halacha is not about Karbanat Tzibur. It's only about the Omer. Why is it about the Omer? What?
Is it
But he said he doesn't think it's true of a regular carbon omer, carbon sibur. He said a regular carbon sibur, the Zayin Ra'anan thinks you can coerce. It's only the omer you can't coerce. Why? He says as follows. Because the omer, remember I said the carbon omer, before you bring the carbon omer, what are you not allowed to do? Eat chadash. You can't eat new grain. So the Magen Avraham, the Zayin Ra'anan, says maybe it's only the omer you can't coerce. Why? Because we don't need to coerce it. We know that as soon as the guy gets hungry,
he's going to
want to
do it.
He's going to want to. Minchas Chinuch says that's ridiculous, because we passed in that even if you don't bring the karban, by the next day, at any rate, we'll see later in the Gemara, but at least by the next day,
you can eat
even without the karban. So what are you talking about? For a few hours, you're going to bank on the fact that people want to eat early? Might be dumb. That makes no sense. Makes no sense. But what you see is that the Zayin Ra'anan says that this is only carbon omer. It's not halacha at all carbon of tzibur. Is that shot in the Tosaf Tarkonim? No, b'chol not. Because what the Tarkonim said it about carbon of tzibur. Look at skip to 14 for a minute. And if you want proof, the Sifrei there, I typed out the Sifrei, says, non the context of Karban Omer says, Lutzon Chem, Ein Kofin et Tzibor al Karcho. So does it sound like it's a local Alachar Omer if it appears multiple times in the Sifrei?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And if you look at the Rash Mishans, and Agor of the Chelkat Yov points out as well, it says, Lutzon Chem, Ein Kofin et Tzibor al Karcho, if I. Exactly as Minchas Chinuch thought, because you can't coerce, right? You can't coerce. We'll come back to the rest of the Rashmi Shans in a minute. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan Ha'asid. So the Aruch HaShulchan is written by who? Not the Shulchan Aruch, the Aruch HaShulchan.
Oh.
Ruchil Michal Halevi Epstein.
Of course.
And it was finished in what century?
The 15th.
Other guesses? The 15th is before Shulchan Aruch. Bad guess.
Oh.
But Shulchan Aruch was in the 16th, 1500s.
So the 17th?
The 20th.
Wow.
The 20th. Just like which other book was... Which other major work on Shulchan Aruch? Thank you. Mishneh Berurah died in the 1930s. Mishneh Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan? No, the Aruch HaShulchan Aruch HaYom was written after the Mishneh Berurah. Because he quotes Mishneh Berurah and argues. Yes, Aruch HaShulchan and Mishneh Berurah are both late 19th and early 20th century, and not even that early, like 1930s. I'm not sure how early you're talking anymore. Right? Remember, the Mishneh Berurah. Every time I need to remind you of this, the Mishneh Berurah has an obituary in the New York Times. We're not talking that long ago, people. You still have records of the Chafetz Chaim's obituary in the New York Times. Yes, we have it. I can send it to you later. Mayachos.
Was he like world known?
Yes.
For what?
Being a rabbi.
So
I can find it.
Speaking of which, can I get my smicha and this is a rabbi?
Sure.
There's a few of us that want to do it.
Yeah, yeah, just like last year.
Yeah.
Give me a tradition now, like at least a few.
So the Aruch HaShulchan says. So the Aruch HaShulchan, in addition to his commentary on all of Shulchan Aruch, remember the Mishneh Berurah only wrote on which chelik of Shulchan Aruch?
Aruch HaYom.
The Aruch HaShulchan wrote not only on all four chelikei Shulchan Aruch, but he also wrote on Zroim, Kachem, and Tarot in a separate book he wrote called the Aruch HaShulchan Ha'atid, the future Aruch HaShulchan, which is what you have in 12. He says, Ve'eino muvan ha'min chachovahi. Why can't you coerce until they say we want it? Maybe that's what Darkonim means. And that's how he understands the right. It's not just the Mizifta thinks this. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks that what the Ravid means is you are allowed to coerce as long as they say, Rosani, the Kamashma will never then Nishalam Latsibra, Konim of Vimathram, Elam of Akshman, Behemanim, Rosim Kovan of the Shuma, Rosani. If you look at the Hagot Maharid on the Torah Kohanim, he writes, In Kovan of Tibor al Karchach, Aval Gabdo Tibor Kofan al Tmidin, Kedida Parashat Pinchas, Mikomokomer, Ain Omer, Ain Kofan. He thinks that you can coerce on the Tamid, but you can't on the Omer, like the, who held that? Zairanan. Now he quotes a Sifrei, which I can't find though. He claims that this is a different passage in Midrash Halacha, but I have not been able to find it. I don't think it exists. And what's his argument? Again, the Baichadars lo yidrashu al kach, that they won't be derelict in bringing the Omer. Why?
Because
it's a matir, right? Because it is going to be
so the one thing
matir. Okay, by the way, here, if you would like, I promise I'll show it to you. Here, New York Times. Saturday, September 16th,
1933. Chafetz Chaim 105 is dead in Poland.
See, if you didn't believe me, here you go.
That's right? Pretty whack.
Chafetz Chaim's obituary, New York Times. Saturday, 1916, September
16th. Did they do any other ones for any rabbis?
Here, I will read it to you.
Was he the only one?
Here, look.
Was he the only one that got an obituary?
He's not the only one, no. I will read it to you. Chafetz Chaim 105. Is dead in Poland, venerated by Orthodox Jews as one of the 36 saints who saved the world, lived long in poverty, gave up store when popularity in village deprived other merchants of a living. Wilno, Poland. I assume that means Vilna. I'm not really sure. I don't know. September 15th, Jewish Telegraphic Agency. The famed Chafetz Chaim, venerated by Orthodox Jews throughout the world, is one of the 36 saints because of whose piety the Lord has not destroyed the world. Yeah, this is a New York Times article. Just saying. Not with the New York Times you have nowadays. Died today in the village of Rodin, near here, where he had spent most of the more than 100 years of his life. He had been ill only a short time. Chafetz Chaim, whose real name was Rabbi Yisrael Meir Cohen, has been a figure of almost legendary importance for almost half a century. Stories of his piety sprang up in the lore of Eastern Europe and among Orthodox Jews all over the world. The village where he had arrived for a few months, had served for a few months, as a rabbi, was the source of pilgrimages of thousands of Orthodox Jews seeking the blessing of the Chafetz Chaim. And it keeps going on. It talks about the Chafetz Chaim. It's actually pretty long.
Who wrote it?
Frank F. Thorpe. That's what it says in the bottom of the article. Frank F. Thorpe.
I take it he's not a Jew.
Doesn't sound like it. So there you go.
Is there someone else who is known as Chafetz Chaim that lived earlier?
No.
Living in the...
No, that's
19th
it.
19th century?
No, that's it.
Rabbi, do you know how to make the first Rambam? No. I'm not good at it.
Yeah. Okay, but let's summarize what we have so far. Maybe we'll get one more position out today. Well, I'll have to fill in first, I don't know. Because I know this is a bit complicated, okay? So let's see. Okay, so. Can you coerce a karban zibor? Okay. So what possibilities do we have? What do we have?
Yes.
So we have the Ravid, I'll be the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Maharid, which is, it's the exact normal rule, right? Kofin, Ad, Shiyomar, Rotsani, right? It's exact as everything, same as everything else, right? Kofin Otovachi Yomar Rotsani, exact same. Then you have never, right? Not even this, okay? This is the Rosh Mishans. What's the logic? So one possibility is. This is the Rosh Alpi, the Sifra. So, the Rosh himself says, Genai. Now we said Gnaya can mean one of two things. Either optics, right? It just looks wrong. Or it Sibor needs Ratzon Gamur. Right? It's just the wrong thing to do. Who holds this? This is the Minchas Chinuch within the Torah's Kohanim. Right? Within the Torah's Kohanim. Right? This is how he explains the Torah's Kohanim. Right? This is also, according to Minchas Chinuch, the Rambam goes here also. Right? Minchas Chinuch claims that the Rambam is here too. Okay? Other possibilities are that Sibor is viewed as a corporate entity, and therefore there's no one to force. Right? This is, who says this? Daniel. That's you. Right? That's what you said. I also suggested it if you want to put my name next to it. Okay. What? Sure, got it. Okay, this is our suggestion. This is shared. Okay. The third possibility, which is the Maharid and the Mincha and the Zayin, which is only the Omer because it's a Matir, right? It's a Matir, and therefore you can just wait for it. Just wait. The problem that Chasminov said is really, for the few hours, that's compelling, but fine. It's only Omer, but he quotes, the Maharid quotes a Sifrei that I have no access to, I don't know what he's talking about. One more possibility, so far, let's look at the Tzofna Paneach. The Tzofna Paneach writes, Ayin Torat Kohanim, that's the rugged shepherd, Ritzvi Rosen. He says, Ayin Torat Kohanim, Parashat Emor, Gabe Tmidin Vigame Omer, De Ain Kofin and Tzibor Akarbanot, Vad Ta'am, Mishum De Ikara Kfiya, Hila Hakdish at Akarban, Umimela Akarkach Machaivin Lakrivo, Mashem Karban Tzibor, De Holza Shalo Karbu, Lokal Shem Karban, Klal, De Sakin Moshachtan Lakach, Moshachbu Kfiya. He has a very formalist answer, which is the following. He thinks that normally, by a korban yachid, how are you kofe? So, the person is machdish the korban, right? He sanctifies, right? There's always two steps. First you sanctify the korban, then you bring it. So the Tzofna Paneach says, look, by a normal korban, you sanctify it, right? You're machdish it. And now what? Now it is defined as a korban that has to be brought. If you then, say, you know what, I've already sanctified it, I want to bring it, we force you to bring it here. Why? Because it already exists as a korban in potential. You sanctified it already. Right? You just don't want to bring it. So what do? Idiot, you already were sanctified. Bring it. Just bring it already. But he says a korban tzibur is not like that. A korban tzibur, he thinks that it only becomes defined as a korban when it's brought. And therefore, his argument is very lumdish. You're only allowed to force someone to bring a korban that is already defined as the korban. But by a korban tzibur, it only becomes the korban tzibur when it's actually brought. And therefore, why can't you coerce them? Because you can't coerce them to create the definition. You can only coerce someone to bring that which already exists. But the tzibur, what defines it as a korban tzibur, is the shechita. And if they don't want to bring it, so then there's nothing to coerce them about because it doesn't exist. So that is his argument for why it's tzibur, right? The kedusha starts with shechita. So there's nothing to the coerce. So that is the rugged shaver's argument for this. Okay, you know what? Let me do one more thing. So here's what I... You guys are a little bit tired. I see the fast is getting to you. So if I do the most complicated thing, which is the possibility that this is a machloket Tosefta Mishnah versus the Torah Kohanim, which might explain why the Rambam doesn't postulate it, right? Because remember, we still have to answer this question.
What in the Mishnah?
Right? One second. The Mishnah Sinuk says that the Rambam doesn't postulate it. And he says, why not? He normally postulates like the Torah Kohanim if there is no contradiction. So the solution of some of the Achronim is there's a machlokes, not in the Gemara. It never appears in Shas, but there is a machlokes amongst the Tanaim in the Tosefta. Because remember, Mishnah, Tosefta, Torah Kohanim, same time period, more or less. So it's a machloket, and the Rambam doesn't postulate it because he thinks there's a machloket. So on Thursday, we'll do this possibility that it's a machloket.
Is that a rule? If there's a machloket, he has to postulate the way? Or
no, he doesn't. But once it's machloket, you can at least explain. So he postulates like the other shita. That's not crazy. So on Thursday, we'll do that machloket, and then you'll see that this may not just be a machloket in the Torah Kohanim, but it may be a machloket in Chazal. Okay? But one more thing I want to give you. Now, the bottom, if you look at number 18, you know what? Before I look at 18, I am going to look at 19 for a minute. The Mishnah in Shkalim, if you just want to see where you might have this machlokes, and again, I don't want to get into it too much now, about the corporate entity or not, so look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah quotes the following very complicated machlokes, okay? The halacha is as follows. A normal mincha, how much of it goes on the mincha?
All of
it? Comments. The rest of it is eaten by the kohanim. What's the exception? Minchat kohen. What happens to a minchat kohen? A mincha owned by a kohen?
All of it.
It's all burnt. Kulo kalu. Okay? So the Mishnah records the following machlokas. Amar Yehuda, Hayid ben Bukhri biYavne. Ben Bukhri said in Yavne that kol kohen sheshokel eino chote. That any kohen who gives a machzer shekel does not sin. Why would you think they wouldn't sin? Why would you? What's the hapamina that they would sin? Like, why do you have to say that a kohen is allowed to give machzer shekel? Oh, it's good. It's tanis esser. Today's the minhag to give zechel machzer shekel. Good. Perfect. That we're doing this. Why would you think that it might be usher for a kohen to give machzer shekel?
Because
by contributing, he makes every kohen, every karban, partially a kohen, and if it's a mincha, that means he'll have to be burnt. So kamash malan, it's not true. They're allowed to give. Probably why? Because it's a corporate entity. So Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai lo ki ela kol kohen she'eino shokel chote. So Rabbi Yehuda quotes from Ben Bukhri that they're allowed to give, they don't have to. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says no. If they don't give, they're sinning. Meaning they have to give. Ela she kohanim dorshim mikras ela atzman, but the kohanim have this chat, which is kol minchat kohen kalil tiyeh. Every minchat kohen has to be burnt. Lo deachel can't be in hoel vaomer shkealechem alechem apanim shalom yomeich nechalim. And they said, ah, you're right. There are three major minchot that are brought by the tzibor: the omer, shkealechem, and alechem apanim. And if the kohanim would give money to the Beis HaMikdash, everything would be a karban tzibor, and you'd have to burn all. Sorry, it would be a minchat kohen, and you have to burn all of them. So what does Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai say? The kohanim claim that by giving money to the coffers of the Beit HaMikdash, it would mess up all the karbanot because it would make it partially kohanim. But the halacha is they have to give. So one way of reading my focus is that the kohanim are saying, what is a tzibor? A conglomerate of the people in it. And therefore, if there are a bunch of kohanim who are participating, then every carbon tzibor is partially a carbon kohen, a minchat kohen. And what's Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai saying?
No.
No, it's a carbon tzibor. The tzibor transcends its parts. But like I said, that's a share for another time, but just to see where this might come up. The last thing I'll see for today, and then we'll see this machlokas tonight, and by Thursday I want to finish. Is the following. I emailed one of my rebbeim from when I was in Shiva, who was my first rebbe who taught me kachem. When I first started learning kachem, I was in Shanabet, when we did Menacha Zmakayetz, not this part of Menacha, the first two parts of Menacha, Rav Dani Wolf. And I emailed him about this. Yes, so he emailed me back, and in 18 I gave you part of his email to me. Yes, even though he's American, but he did email me in Hebrew. So I'll just read it to you. He says, Abo b'tzibur shalem, she'ino rotzen l'kayim mitzvah aseh, b'zeh l'omrin b'tzibur shalem, onis atzmo b'dato hara. Right, he took the position that, which we mentioned before, whatever, 2B, let's call this, which is, by an individual you can say, yeah, he really wants to do it, but his yitzer hara is stopping him. By a tzibur, you can't do that. He says...
Too many yitzer haras.
What? Or something like that. And if you look, so hold off on the first paragraph here where he's going to get into the machloket tanayim, which is how I knew there was machloket tanayim, because he told me. But look at the last line. He says, optia acher, here's another option. Shechelek midin kfianu atza bidin tzibur. Klomar tzibur musmach lechvot hayachim. And this is his possibility, another possibility, which is, why can't we force them? Because the nature of kfiya is that the bezin represents the community, is allowed to coerce an individual. That's how coercion works. Right? As the famous line goes, right, I think it was Robert Cover who said this, right, that the law is what, right, permits what, right, permits violence or allows violence, whatever, some line like that, right? That by making something the law, it makes it not violence, it makes it implementation of the law. That's what law does. Right. That type of power, by definition, is a community coerces an individual who's out of line. But what if the community is out of line? Where's that power going to come from? Right, the nature of governmental coercion is this. He says, Kolmar tzibur musmach l'chor ha-yachid. Zechut v'koach natun l'tzibur l'chor ha-yachidim. Aval lo sabir sh'yachid l'chor ha-tzibur afil l'asod d'ivrei Torateinu HaKadoshah. He said, no individual has the right to force the tzibur, even to do the right thing, but still coercion. Maybe you imagine that coercion is, right, the rabbin over the yachid. But it makes no sense that a person would be able to coerce the tzibur. That's not how coercion works. Right? It's a tool in the toolkit of the community. So those are five and a half possibilities to understand this. We've seen the minority view that it's only Omer, right? This is the Zayat Hanan, right? And the Maharid. What we'll do on Thursday is the possibility that, in fact, this is simply a machloket tanoim between the Midrash Halacha and the Tosefta that we're going to look at in Shkolim. So just to set you up, on Thursday what I want you to do is read the Tosefta in 16. Okay? The Tosefta is, part of the Tosefta is quoted in the Gemara, which I gave you in 22, and we're going to try to get through all the sources between 16 and 24. If we have time, we'll do 25, 26, and 27. If not, we'll hold off on that, because
I can definitely do 27.
So we're going to hold off on that. That is going to be part of, if we have time, we'll get through it. If not, we'll come back to it. But I definitely, by Thursday, I want to make sure, when you're not fasting, to do this machloket tanaim. Like I said, this is not an easy sugya, but I've had fun doing it anyways. Okay. One of the nice things about Kachem is people don't really write about it so much, so you can really be very imaginative, right? You know, it's, you become a Bala member very quickly.